Hi, welcome to Colonial Williamsburg, past and present, on history.org. This is Behind the Scenes, where you meet the people who work here. That's my job. I'm Lloyd Dobbins, and mostly I ask questions. Williamsburg has held a spot on the map since 1699, when Jamestown colonists chose it for their capital. 82 years later, Virginia's capital was relocated to Richmond, and the once bustling Williamsburg became a backwater. As years passed, modern conveniences steadily infiltrated the 18th century facade until service stations and five and dimes cast their blocky shadows over homes where history was made. Williamsburg's colonial identity might have been lost had it not been for the improbable partnership of a country church rector and a powerful oil magnate. Here with me to talk about the town's restoration is Will Mullineaux, who enjoys researching early colonial Williamsburg and writes for Colonial Williamsburg, the journal. I've always been curious when people began to talk about the restoration of Williamsburg. How about the people who lived in Williamsburg, to the people that where this was home and where they made a living?
The people who lived here after the Civil War were very conscious of the history of Williamsburg and the history of Virginia, and Jamestown in particular. It was a sense of pride that they had after the destruction of the Civil War. And the residents of Williamsburg clearly understood the importance of the buildings, the 18th century buildings that remained intact, although in some cases a dilapidated state. They knew of its importance, and there are many examples of individuals who worked very hard to preserve the homes that they owned. And the family pieces of furniture and paper that were kept intact in town over the years. There's a wonderful story about Dr. Goodwin when he first came to Williamsburg in 1903. After he was in Williamsburg for a while, he moved to Rochester, New York, and then came back to Williamsburg. But this pertained to this first time in Williamsburg, and it was told that he would go calling on parishioners in town and enjoyed having them show him old letters that were written by Lafayette and Washington that had been kept in the family. So he was aware of the interest that the residents had in Williamsburg history as much as he instilled in them and into the community a spirit of restoring and the town.
Goodwin is W.A.R. Goodwin, who was the rector of Bruton Parish Church. He accepted the Bruton Parish Church appointment on the condition that he could restore the church. And then he got interested in restoring the whole thing.
His first term as rector, that's quite true. He was born in Virginia, was well aware of the history of Williamsburg and the importance of the church. He was a son of a Confederate veteran, and when he was in Williamsburg, he was very much active in the restoration of the church at that time. Now, this was the restoration in preparation of the 1907 Jamestown, what we would call the Jamestown anniversary, because it was the 300th anniversary at that time. And the church was in a rundown condition. And his predecessor started to raise money to fix up the church. His predecessor ran afoul of some church leaders and left town. Dr. Goodwin came with the understanding that he would continue this work that was done by Mr. Roberts, was his name, the previous rector's name, would continue this work.
You said the Bruton Parish Church was in quite a rundown condition. I have seen some film of Williamsburg in those days, and Williamsburg is just a little spot on the road that really looks dumpy and dilapidated and nothing that would attract you.
Absolutely, but I disagree with you. Nothing would attract you. People would come to Williamsburg. Tourists would come to Williamsburg. to see the old ruins, to see the spot where a lot of the history and the colonial history took place. And at that time, I'm talking about the early 1900s now, they'd come to see the Audrey House. Now, the Audrey House was what we call the Bush House today on Palace Green. But it was a house made famous in a very popular novel at that time called Audrey. And people who read the novel would come to Williamsburg to see the Audrey House. They'd also come to see where the palace stood. They'd come to see the Bruton Parish. And they would come to see the museum that was in the Powder Magazine, then called the Powder Horn.
Yeah, I think the Powder Magazine has been everything it is even possible for a building to be.
You're right. It was a stable once.
Yeah. I mean, it's just the fact that any of it survived has always amazed me.
Well, it survived because people took care of it, what they could. Fire was the problem that was the enemy the Virginia Gazette in the early days, if something of significance of an old building burned down, the headline would be, "We've lost another ancient structure."
Really?
Yeah. People in town were very aware of the importance of the town. Now, it was dilapidated, as you keep referring to it, because the town was very poor. The college had a couple of hundred students. The largest institution in town was a mental institution. But it wasn't, but it was on the railroad, which made Williamsburg connected to civilization, so to speak, to Newport News, to more important, to Fort Monroe, and where the Chesapeake Bay steamers would land, because people traveled by bay steamers to Baltimore and Washington and elsewhere. The railroad also took it to Richmond. There were four trains, passenger trains a day. So people would come and go, but people in town,
almost more than now.
Yes, perhaps more than now, but people didn't have much money. The city was in debt. In great debt. It didn't have public water except served by three wells. It didn't have public sewage. There were outhouses in town. You know, the streets weren't lit. Town was late in paving its main streets. They paved the sidewalks before they paved the streets. Had telephones, of course. Had electricity, of course. But the town was. The community was in debt. It didn't have a very good fire department. The fire truck was in a shed in the center of town. And if there was a fire during the day, the college bell would ring or the Eastern State Hospital bell would ring. And the one city employee who had a wagon picking up trash, a horse-drawn wagon, would come down to the firehouse, hook up the horse, and go to the fire. And the rest of the volunteers would get there. Well, of course, you're going to lose a lot by fire. Williamsburg didn't have money to have a fire department of any sort with fire equipment. Police was very much part-time. The jail was probably not. I think there's records of where those who were in jail could go out in the evening to get their meal. You know, it was a very, very small community where everybody knew everybody else, but they didn't have any money. So when Mr. Rockefeller came to town and said, "I'll build you a new firehouse, I'll build you a new courthouse," they welcomed him.
When Dr. Goodwin and John D. Rockefeller wanted to restore the town, to rebuild the town, what major challenges did they face? I mean, you've just listed all the challenges a town can face.
Well, the major challenge was acquiring property. And Mr. Rockefeller said, I think very clearly, that he didn't want to pay, he wanted to pay fair market, but not, and they were afraid of the values just getting out of hand.
If word got out, the price of everything went up.
Exactly. So Dr. Goodwin went to the local newspapers, and that was in Norfolk and Newport News and in Richmond. And the editors there pretty much agreed not to nose around. And this was at a time now, in 1926-28, when the Virginia Gazette was not being published. So you didn't have any local reporting of it. Journalists would have had a field day if they were alert to what was going on.
Yeah.
There were occasional journalists in town and stories in Baltimore paper and elsewhere, I think, on what was going on in town. But the major challenge was to acquire the property at a fair price and to get big chunks of property and to have everybody sign on to it. And, of course, there'll always be, as much as the people in town understood their history and held fast and held dear to it, you know, they might not want to give it up to a Yankee called Mr. Rockefeller.
Why did he want it?
Well, I think that he was enamored with the presentations that were made by Dr. Goodwin for the importance of maintaining and restoring Williamsburg and the opportunity to preserve a whole town. Now, it grew to be a whole town. The first presentations were for just a few buildings, and then the buildings became buildings that were on Market Square and the Palace Green, and then first thing you knew, gee whiz, we better take the whole town if this is going to mean anything.
We'll continue our conversation with Will Mullineaux about the Williamsburg Restoration next week. Let us know what you think about the show. Leave your feedback at www.history.org/podcast. That's Colonial Williamsburg, past and present this time. Check history.org often. We'll post more for you to download and hear.